Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Jerry Dulac of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette in a moment, but first our play-by-play call of the day. Last night, the Dodgers beat the Washington Nationals 3-2. Rick Monday with the call.
The 1-2 on the way, driving to center field. That's hit well. Going back is Revere. He looks up. It is gone. Yasmani Grandal on a 1-2 pitch clears the fence, and the Dodgers take the lead. The bats have been quiet in the first seven innings, but a walk, a single, and now Yasmani Grandal with his sixth home run of the season. The Dodgers take the lead 3-2.
And won it by a score of 3-2 over the Nationals last night. All right, we have plenty to talk about with our next guest. He is a Penn Stater, went to Penn State same time I did, as a matter of fact, and he won't brag about that. But Jerry Dulac for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, I passed you two or three times last week. You were busy, so I apologize for not stopping by and talking a little bit with you. It's great to have you with us, though.
Well, Steve, you should have stopped and said hello. And you threw the Penn State bait out there to come on the show, and I gladly accepted because it was you.
I appreciate that very much. I want to start with the Open. Obviously, a common question is how the USGA handled the Dustin Johnson situation. What was your opinion on the actual replay of it and then how the USGA handled it?
Well, two things. Let's start with how they handled it, Steve, which I thought was poorly in this regard. To me, if you are going to go out on the golf course and tell him, as they did on the 12th tee, that there is a pending rules violation, well, to me, if you are going to go out on the golf course, then you tell him that you have decided to penalize him. Because in my, I believe in their mind, it was made up. And if you were listening, if you'd heard, like anybody who was listening, heard what they said on the broadcast when Jeff Hall actually, to his credit, came into the television tower at Fox, when you listened to him, it sounded as though they made up their mind because, according to the rule, it doesn't matter if Dustin Johnson thinks he moved the ball or not. That the fact that the ball moved, whether he caused it or not, as long as he was in the vicinity within a certain time frame of some actions, like a practice putting stroke, placing the putter behind the ball, whatever. Even if he thinks he didn't do it and it happens, they have the right to penalize him. So I believe that their mind was made up. So if their mind's made up and you're going to go to the golf course, onto the course, then you should have told him you have a one-shot penalty. And then all the other players, through the walking rules officials with every group, would be informed, and it would be up on a scoreboard, of course, you know, what his score would be. They really don't even need to be informed. I mean, if all of a sudden they see Dustin Johnson's 4-under instead of 5, then they know, what's it matter whether he made a bogey or was given a one-shot penalty, they know what the score is. So I think a little bit of that was overblown about the other guys deserve to know. They would find out real quickly. But that's, yeah. That, of course, to me, was the problem. And if you, so then otherwise, don't go on the golf course. Now, the rule itself, the kind of the hypocrisy of the rule and somewhat the contradictory nature of the rule to me is this. Steve, are you a golfer?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so if you place the ball on the tee, and you're on the teeing ground, and you place your ball on the tee, and you get ready to hit it, you put your club behind your driver, behind the ball, and you knock the ball off the tee, guess what? Mm-hmm. There's no penalty. There's no stroke. You get to put the ball back on the tee. Your club touched that ball and knocked it off, but you can pick it back up and put it on the tee. No penalty, no stroke, as long as you don't make a swing at the ball. As long as you haven't attempted a swing, you can do that. So what's the difference, right, of that as opposed to even if Dustin Johnson nudged the ball, even if he did by accident, so what? You mark it and replace it. That's what I don't understand. Why is one a penalty and the other isn't? And it shouldn't be a penalty. So if it's an accident, and when you don't even touch it and it moves, so he's standing there. They need to change that rule. It's silly. It's archaic. And as I said, worst of all, it's contradictory.
The practice rounds on Monday through Wednesday were with dry conditions, and I know everyone struggled scoring on the course. What did the rain do and change that golf course and thus change the tournament?
Yeah, it changed the entire complexion of how it was played and, you know, the course itself and the scores. You know, in 2007, Steve, Angel Cabrera won 5 over par, 285. Right. No U.S. Open at Oakmont has ever had a winning score lower than 279. Well, Dustin Johnson, even with the penalty, was 276. So that's the lowest it's ever been at an Open. The 54-hole score, 7 under par, lowest it's ever been at an Open at Oakmont. 8 players under par in 2007, 49 subpar rounds this time. So it was just a completely different golf course. You know, are the players better? Yeah, but, you know, I mean, you know, the rough is just as thick, if not thicker. They you know, they did cut it lower than what they were anticipating. They were going to keep it 4.5 to 5 inches, and it was so thick that they cut it back to 4 inches. Well, you know, that helps those guys, and that does them a bit of a favor. But when you see balls stopping on the green out of the rough, I mean, you never see that at Oakmont. And I'm standing out there Sunday with Bob Ford, the longtime golf professional. I said to him, I said, what do you see out there? He says, what? I go, green. I go, everywhere you look, it's green. Last year at Chambers Bay, now they let that get away from them. The only time it was green out there was in April. When you saw it on TV, it had a nice hue of brown. And Oakmont actually likes a nice kind of, you know, tints and hues of brown here and there. They don't mind that because that means their golf course is playing firm and fast. And the only brown hues you saw out there were in the, you know, were in the fescue, in the grassy ditches. Everything was lush green like Ireland. And when you see that, that's not the way Oakmont desires its golf course. It looked fantastic, and it still played tough, but it didn't play Oakmont tough.
No, and you and I both know enough members there at Oakmont where, look, that's the way they play the golf course. That is right. The golf course. They want the greens 14 on the stent meter. They keep the width of the fairways that way. But here's a big question. Dottie Pepper wrote an article saying that the USGA does too much to great golf courses. What is your opinion? Do they do too much to, quote, I don't know, make it tougher or trick it up?
No, they don't do not trick it up. I'm a big fan of Mike Davis, Steve. He's their executive director. And since he took over, the complaints, the trickery that existed under the previous regime, what happened at Shinnecock was, you know, under a previous regime in 2004,
right.
I think there was. No, they don't trick it up.
Yeah, it was 2004, and then the greens and what they did to the greens. And
on number 7, and they lost the green. You remember they had to water it in between groups, and it was a disaster. And so none of that has happened under Mike Davis's watch. The closest came last year, and that got a little out of control. And I think they didn't have to worry about that this year with the storm. You know, they got 3 inches of rain Wednesday night through Thursday night. And it just, you know, I mean, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it was absolutely the way they wanted it. And, you know, and then they can control how much water they want to put on the golf course. But when you get 3 inches of rain, you know, now everything's changed. And you feel bad for the people who want to prepare it and get it just where they want it. You know, very, very hard, but not unfair in the least, just very difficult. And all those guys will still tell you it's very difficult. Hey, only 4 guys were under par. And you saw
That's
the best
right.
players in the world either miss the cut or shoot a bunch. Jordan Spieth shoots 9 over, even Jason Day after that big run. I mean, you know, he finishes 2 over, and Mickelson misses the cut, and Justin Rose misses the cut, and Rory McIlroy misses the cut. and Hideki Matsuyama and a bunch of other players. So you saw some of the best players in the world shoot a bunch and have a really difficult time. So, I mean, Oakmont's hard, and it still played hard, but it did not play the way it can play. And, you know, the Oakmont members, they're not upset by it. They're just disappointed by it.
Well, they'll have it again in 2025 because it's one of the great golf courses in America, so they're getting it back again. They made that announcement during the tournament.
Yeah, If it were up to me, I am not a fan of, don't get me wrong, I'd like to play Chambers Bay, but I don't think it should host the U.S. Open. I'm not a fan, and I get why the USGA does it, but of the public course venues. Like Bethpage Black, when I was there for two opens, you know, you feel it's in a state park. You feel like you're at a pig roast, you know, like a rib festival. It's just it's a different setting. And next year it goes to Erin Hills. I'm a big fan of those iconic clubs, you know, Oakmont, Marion, which I love, Olympic Club, Wingfoot, you know, those places, Shinnecock. To me, if there was a five-course rota for the U.S. Open, those five courses I just mentioned. And I know I'll be leaving out Pebble and Pinehurst, but to me, you give me the classic, old-time historic venues for the U.S. Open, and that's just my opinion.
That's why down the road I'm intrigued they're going to bring it back to the Country Club in Brookline.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's one of the courses you and I are talking about, and I agree with you. I mean, Pebble, I'd make it somewhat of an exception, except it's a regular stop on the tour anyway. But the courses you're talking about are the courses in this country.
I had this conversation with Curtis Strange, and he said he agreed with me. He said he'd throw Oak Hill in there. Well, naturally, he wanted Oak Hill, but he also wanted the Country Club.
Yeah, in Rochester, right?
Right, and he also wanted the Country Club in Brookline. In fact, that's the first U.S. Open I ever covered is when he beat Nick Faldo at the Country Club. But, those places like that. But, you know, when Oakmont holds it nine times and you bring it back to Shinnecock and Wingfoot, you know the massacre at Wingfoot and what happened to Phil Mickelson and then Marion, you know, the history at Marion, it's a shame that it took so long to get it back there, but they're landlocked there. I mean, it's just amazing how they, I don't know if you got a chance to be out there, but just how they just shoehorned everything in there. My gosh. But Marion's a tremendous golf course, and when I see the Open at those places, to me, that's what the U.S. Open is about because there's so much history there.
Yeah, and I did cover the Open at Marion as well, just like the one at Oakmont. And you're right, they were putting corporate tents were in backyards on Golf House Road.
Yeah, and in front yards, everywhere. I mean, it was, and, you know, they had the driving range was a mile down the road. It was just an entirely different setup. It was tough access for the people, you know, limited where you could walk. But the golf course itself is just wonderful.
Yeah, it's the U.S. Open. It doesn't have to be, to me, you know, like a British Open or a links-style course, unless it's a natural American links-style course. I mean, I think we have our own style of golf course in our country, and I think that we have some great golf courses in our country that fit our golf courses. We're not a British Open. We don't have British Open courses.
You know, it's funny, Steve, that it's kind of why all along, I was telling people that I thought a foreign player would win the U.S. Open because it not only looks like a links-style course without the ocean, of course, with no trees, but Oakmont can play like a links-style course. So many of the golf courses in our country, most Americans learn to play this way because most American courses are this way. The golf is played through the air with forced carries and elevated greens and, you know, bunker complexes. So golf is played more through the air here, whereas in Britain and on the links-style courses in Europe, golf is played along the ground. And when you look at Oakmont, you know, you could play, one along the ground, four along the ground, eight along the ground, nine along the ground, 10, 12, 14, 15, and 18, not so much, but a little bit. But, you know, I just named eight or nine holes that you can play along the ground, and I just felt that, you know, a foreign player was more adept and more accustomed to playing that way. And when you look, Angel Cabrera won. I know he's an Argentinian. Ernie Els won previous to that. And that's why I kind of like my kind of quiet prediction was a European player for that reason. And when Shane Lowry was winning and looked like he might win, it was it was kind of like holding true there for a while.
A couple questions, Steelers, before I let you go, and that would be this is the quietest time of the year. But what's your impression by what everyone gave you from what they've done here in the last month or so? What kind of feel do you get for that team?
Well, I think I don't think really anything's changed, Steve, from their feeling, not only from the draft in the offseason, but from Denver, really, which is, you know, when you look at those two games, and I know they got a break in Cincinnati and a bad break in Denver, but for 3.5 quarters with a banged up football team and a young defense, they controlled both the Bengals and the Broncos, two of the best offenses in the league, and their defense was shutting them down, and they controlled the game for 3.5 quarters. And you know, they played against Denver without Antonio Brown, without both running backs. They played without Le'Veon Bell for a good portion of the season as well. And, of course, injuries everywhere else, you know, offensive line, I could go on and on. Their feeling is that, the young defense is only going to get better, and their commitment was to blow up and rework their secondary, and they did that. They did that in the draft. They did not re-sign a lot of guys, and why would you in the secondary, in the back end? So, the Steelers, they'll be one of the AFC favorites for the Super Bowl. There's no question about it. And they have a lot of young, aggressive athletes on defense. And you saw that last year, especially toward the end of the year, which is what they would hope, that as the year went on, those young players would get better. And now they come back, some of them for year two, others for year three. They barring injury, and they had plenty of injuries last year, they should be very, very good. And like I said, they and throw somebody else in there, New England, because of Tom Brady, maybe they'll be one of the top favorites for the Super Bowl, no question about it.
It's one thing that in the NHL they'll tell you it's an upper body injury and a lower body injury. Now we all get to guess what it is. In the NFL, obviously, you get more information. But obviously, we've found out that Le'Veon Bell and Pouncey, their injuries were maybe even more extensive than some people realize. What kind of clock do you think the Steelers might put them on in the preseason to make sure that they actually are ready to start when everything flies in September?
Yeah, I think with Marquise Pouncey, he's fine. They'll limit how much he plays in the preseason for sure and how much he practices. But they'll go in with the idea he'll be ready, and they'll operate from that standpoint. With Le'Veon Bell, I think it'll be a little different, a little more cautious. Because I don't want to say they're not sure when he'll be ready. I think they have a better gauge of where Marquise Pouncey is than Le'Veon Bell, so they'll be even more cautious with him. Their answer all along is they don't have a timetable. That's not to say they don't believe he'll be ready. They're just going to see how he progresses. Everyone I've talked to, he's exactly where he should be. And doesn't appear to be any setbacks. I think training camp will speak to us a little bit more, but I don't think there's any question they'll be cautious to the point that if they have to go easy with him early in the year, and if the case may be that he doesn't play in September early, which I don't expect to be the case, then if that they're prepared to go that way. But I don't think that's going to be the case, Steve. I think they feel that it's going to, they want to see where he is, but they don't want to put any timetable on him. And I think they feel just a little bit better about where Marquise Pouncey is in his recovery.
Jerry, absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for carving out a few minutes with us today. I really appreciate it.
Well, Steve, a good chat with you. And I understand the station is now a member of the Steeler Radio Network, which is really cool. So, I can be heard on the pregame show on the network. And, that's always nice to have the word spread even more, more broad across the state. So anyway, good chat with you, Steve, and I'll talk to you soon.
Jerry Dulac from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. No, Jerry for a long time. I crossed paths with him 3 or 4 times last week, but he was busy talking to other people, and I didn't want to interrupt and and so forth, and probably should have based on what he said, but that's okay. It's great to have him on. We will come back. Derrick Rose is a New York Knick. The Bulls traded him today. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK. So Derrick Rose is a New York Knick. Robin Lopez, Jose Calderon, Jerry and Grant, and a second-round pick go to the Bulls. Rose averaged 16.5 points, 3.5 boards, 4.7 assists per game this past year. But, of course, the big problem with him is all the games he's missed because of his knee injuries. He only played 39 games in 2012. He only played 10 games in 2014. He got it up to 51 games in 2015 and 66 games this past season. He'll have 1 year left on his contract, as he now joins forces with Carmelo Anthony and Kristaps Porzingis in New York with the Knicks. Derrick Rose traded today by the Bulls. Press conference at 5 o'clock.
Summer 2016 is officially here, and Sunbury Motors Kia is making it worry-free. Brand new Kia this summer, worry-free, with no payments due until November. It's the Summers on Us sales event at Sunbury Motors Kia. Now that summer is officially here, buy a new in-stock 2016 Optima Hybrid, Forte, and Soul, and pay nothing for the summer. With Kia taking care of your first two payments and 90 days deferred payments, you get up to 5 months before your first payment is due. That's November. And with Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty, we're talking a worry-free ride with no payments to make. And you also get 0% financing for up to 66 months. Summer's officially here, but the Summers on Us sales event will only be around until the July 4th holiday, so you have to hurry in to Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf and at sunburymotors.com.
Tax extra. 0% APR financing. No qualified customers through payment. Restrictions apply. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to kia.com.
Join the discussion about news, sports, and more by following News Radio 1070 WKOK on Facebook. You'll get breaking news updates, plus stories where you can weigh in with your opinions. Follow the news and let your voice be heard. Plus, win prizes on our Facebook-only contests. Follow us on Facebook today and join the discussion with News Radio 1070 WKOK. Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, we'll get to the sports bozo of the day in a moment. Well, in fact, we'll do that first just to get it out of the way. It's Johnny Manziel. I mean, I know you're shocked. I know. I know you find it hard to believe that Johnny Manziel could have done something, but the Dallas Police Department reports that Manziel did report a hit-and-run collision earlier this week.
Another one.
Yep.
Man.
Manziel had a witness from his vehicle and an impartial witness. And evidently it's not his fault. But he is a magnet. And he got hit. I mean, he got hit in the driver's side of the car. He got hit. I mean, they say his car was T-boned and the other driver left the scene. So it's not Johnny's fault, but it's just the fact that he's involved in another one. You're like, another one. It's like that line. It's like that line from The Hunt for Red October. Fatality, you've lost another submarine. All right. Now let's get. We're going to get to Ryan Snyder in a moment, but listen to all the news today. Derrick Rose dealt by the Chicago Bulls to the New York Knicks for Robin Lopez, Jose Calderon, Jerry and Grant, and a second-round draft pick. He has 1 year left in his contract at $21 million a year. Jeff Teague was dealt by the Atlanta Hawks to the Pacers in a three-team trade. LeBron James says, I love Cleveland. I don't plan to leave. And then there's this. The NHL has okayed officially, Las Vegas is the 31st franchise. they will pay an expansion fee of $500 million, which they already have. Each team in the NHL is going to get $16.6 million from Las Vegas in expansion. They will begin play in 2017-2018. Now, it should be pointed out that the NHL announced that it has deferred the expansion application by Quebecors and its ownership group in Quebec City. And that means it's not completely dead. That's the key to that. It is not. It just means that they're not going to be part of this. Quebec City, now, right now the Canadian dollar is 78 cents to the American dollar. So the NHL is going to go with an unusual move. They're going to go with one team. They've officially approved Las Vegas. And they felt it was a snub at Quebec City, which went ahead and worked with Quebecors on a brand new arena. They have the Videotron Center, which is huge. Beautiful, beautiful arena. But there is deferment. It doesn't look like for the moment there's an NHL expansion team. There is hope that there are two teams that they are looking at, the New York Islanders and, yes, the Carolina Hurricanes. So Quebec's not out of this thing, but they did announce they have deferred the application, which was not an outright rejection of it. But Las Vegas is officially in. They are officially in. They'll start in 17-18. So not a shortfall on news this afternoon at all. Not a shortfall on news. Plenty of it. All right, let's get to... Oh, by the way, Gary Bettman, 8-minute press conference, never once mentioned the word gambling. You know, it's irrelevant. It really is. It is irrelevant. That's why I laugh about the NFL thing. Well, you know, the Raiders might move. What about gambling? Yeah, but the NFL plays 3 games a year in London, and the entire country has sportsbook. Have you ever heard any other show bring that up? I haven't. I mean, believe me, it's no worry to sports leagues. It really isn't. Maybe in the 60s it would have been. Or at least based on the fact Sean always watches Goodfellas all the time, so it's kind of... All right, so... All right. Let's bring in Ryan Snyder from Blue White Illustrated to cap the day off. Ryan, welcome. Great to have you back.
Doing good, Steve.
Good.
Good to talk to you.
Great to talk with you. First of all, we hope that you had a great time in your honeymoon. It's been an incredible month for you.
It has been. I'll be honest, I would take St. Martin over my couch and the admin page right now. But you know, we got to get work done on the magazine. So okay.
Got to take care of all sorts of things, all part of the job.
Yep.
All right, logging those heavy innings. That's what Ryan Snyder does. He gets the magazine into the eighth inning, and then they bring in Nate Bauer to close. Bauer sitting back saying, "You got to be kidding me." Hey, Bauer, will you tell Bauer, by the way, we're going to take care of this on the air right now. You tell Bauer, we have been trying like crazy for the last 3 weeks to get him on the show. He needs to return something. call, a text, an email.
You're not the only one who does that, too. To be honest with you, he does a lot of golfing around this time of the day.
Which is great.
That's probably the issue right there.
I think that's great. Golfing. But he pulled me aside and he said, "Hey, by the way, I'd love to be on the show." I said, "Well, we've been trying to get you on the show." All right.
I'll make sure I text him after this.
Yeah, let him know. All right. He's been called out. All right. Junior college transfers going to Penn State. Over the years, several have been able to do it. But there's always an issue, and I've seen it for years, so this is not unusual, but it's the transferring of credits. So where is Penn State running into, or Penn State football running into an issue with a transfer and credits?
Yeah. So I'll give gotta give Fitz the credit for this one. So Sean Fitz earlier this week, you know, one of my good friends, competitor of mine, but 247. He put it out there that one of Penn State's junior college transfers isn't going to be making it on campus anytime soon here. And basically, you know, the whole situation here is he needs at least one more credit, from what I understand. We're three more credits. You know, to make sure he gets through. From what I understand, it may be more than that. You'd have to ask the coaching staff. I don't know all the specifics there. But basically, you know, he was – oh, excuse me, it's Tyrell Chavis. I didn't say his name earlier.
Yes.
But, but anyways, so there's different semesters at Nassau Community College, and I believe the goal was to have him take classes this past semester. You know, I think there's three summer sessions there. For some reason, he could not take that class this past semester, which I believe just ended or is about to end. So now he's forced to take this class this upcoming semester, which I believe starts this week or next, or maybe it just started. I apologize. I don't know their academic.
Wait, here at Penn State?
At Nassau.
At Nassau, yeah, okay.
Yeah, excuse me. So right now, basically, the whole situation is we have to see what happens after that. I believe he's going to be taking that class. And like I said, since there are three different semesters in the summer there, that means it will end right at the end of July or the first week of August, mm-hmm. I believe, which, if everything would work out well, he would be able to get here in time for preseason camp, or maybe, you know, miss the first couple of days. But it wouldn't be a total disaster. But you know, at the same time, we just have to see how this works out. You know, Chavis has had issues with this in the past. You know, it's been a struggle, and it's a shame because he's actually a really good kid, and you know, he has a heck of a player. But it has been an issue at times. So we just have to see how this class shakes out. I don't believe it's a Penn State issue. I believe it's an NCAA issue. But you know, at the same time, I can't pretend like I know every single detail here. But basically.
Well, yeah,
wrap it up.
But what people I have to understand, though, is this. Not every school takes every credit from another school. They don't mm-hmm. accept every. I mean, this has nothing to do with athletics. Zero. I mean, my son Christopher, for example, is going into his senior year at Lock Haven. Lock Haven would not accept any of the credits he had at South Hills. All right? I mean, zero. So we had to start from scratch and go from there. So, I mean, this is not unusual in terms of how this works. It's just that's how it works.
Exactly. My brother had the same issue. You know, he did a semester at Hack Community College, you know, down in Harrisburg. And, you know, I think, you know, three or four of his class worth of credits transferred, but not every single one of them.
Right.
So, exactly. So that's the main issue here. I believe, you know, I'll give him a lot of credit, you know, he has, you know, definitely improved here over the last semester or two. His coach has been speaking highly of, you know, putting the work in and getting ready to be here. So it just looks like, you know, he has to clarify this one credit, maybe two. I believe it's just one. Or, you know, when I say credit, I mean one class, basically, which is, you know, three credits. So I believe, you know, if everything goes well, he'll be here, you know, come early August. But, you know, we still have another month of kind of waiting and seeing. So we'll see how it works. But Penn State's definitely going to need him. I mean, they need bodies down there, whether he can make an impact right away or not.
Right.
That's only going to be determined in the first couple games. But just getting bodies in there, getting guys with you know, junior college experience, with that size, with that, you know, just that overall experience is the most important thing.
All right. Now, here's the next part. Penn State does not have a lot of scholarships to operate with this time through. It's just, you know, the way they've had to build up so quickly. Does that slow down sometimes the recruiting there's always been this, like, the last couple of years, wow, they're getting this guy, this guy, this guy, but they had room to operate. Is that what's slowing down the pace of what we're seeing?
Yeah, it's definitely a part of it. You know, there's every recruit is different. So, you know, there's a lot of them that, you know, want to see how Penn State performs in the first five games. You know, there's a lot of them that just have it in their mindset that, hey, you know, if my parents want me to take my official visits, I have to take these visits, you know, in September, October, mm-hmm. November. So everyone's different. But absolutely, and make no mistake about it, you know, having, you know, under 20 or so or right around 20 or so, you know, scholarships, it forces the staff to be more selective. And I think you're definitely seeing that play in the part right now. You know, wide receiver is a position that they're being somewhat aggressive with right now. But outside of that, it's not really the case. So I would even say linebacker is the case too. But, you know, a D tackle, defensive back, You know, even running back, they're really focused on DeAndre Swift. There's quite a few positions where, you know, they have their offer out. There's two, three guys they're really focused on, working hard on. And, you know, right now they just are kind of in wait-and-see mode. And, you know, they're not going to hand out other offers to just get things moving. You know, they want to make sure that they get the right guy for their system. So, you know, it's a little bit of everything, but definitely I would say, you know, wide receiver, the linebackers would agree, you know, that's maybe the two spots where, you know, the staff is really trying to get another commitment to right now. But other than that, it's definitely, you know, they have their guys picked out and wait and see what where they stand, at least after the last pass. Well, I think we'll get a lot of answers then.
What are the takeaways from the elite camp?
Elite camp. Let's see here. The elite camp this year, I mean, Kyle Pitts, the 2018 tackle, or excuse me, tight end from Archbishop Wood, you know, he was the one guy that walked away with an offer. Played great, I thought, especially for a tight end. You know, he was out there moving like a wide receiver, I thought. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once I learned a little more about him and realized, you know, the way he's projected and grow and whatnot, I'm thinking, wow, this is a pretty athletic young man right here. So that's he was maybe the one, you know, not under the radar prospect, but guy going into it that, you know, I didn't know about and left extremely impressed with. But outside of that, though, I think most of the focus was definitely on Sean Clifford, you know, Penn State's 2016 mm-hmm. quarterback commit. He was great. And one thing with Clifford is two things to know. One, he's been throwing a ton lately. So, you know, he really does kind of need to take a rest and relax a bit.
Yeah.
And yet, even despite all that, you know, I really thought that his deep ball has improved substantially, which is good to see because, in my opinion, you know, 5, 10, 15, you know, those intermediate to short game routes, those have always been his strength. You know, his accuracy is pretty solid from what I've been able to see. So the fact that we're seeing, you know, nice 35, 40-yard deep balls, you know, good fade routes, you know, put in position, and that was very good to see, especially after a month of constant throwing. So that's maybe the main thing that stood out to me the most. Chris Blake, Mike Miranda, two offensive linemen were in attendance. They both did very, very well. You know, I wasn't too stacked of a defensive line group, so I would expect them to do well. But outside of that, I mean, those were kind of the main guys that stood out to me. They were at least what I was focused on. I'm sure there were a couple other guys that I didn't get to see as much, and I'll learn more about here in the coming weeks. But those are the four guys that kind of stood out.
What is it about the relationship between him and this school and staff that has him so strongly tied in where he is recruiting so hard to help the staff out?
Sean Clifford, you're referring
yep.
to?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, Sean is...
you know I can't say his name.
I wasn't thinking. I got you, bud. Sean is taking it, taking this role and running with it, man. And it's actually been a lot of fun to watch. I mean, you know, over the years, I've had a couple guys who would reach out to me and be like, hey, you know, I want to get in touch with this guy. I want to get in touch with this coach. You know, just to introduce himself and whatnot. You know, Brandon did that. I've had a couple other guys over the years do that. Sean is taking it really to a different level right now. I mean, he is always reaching out to either myself or other reporters, you know, trying to get contact info for these guys, which, you know, is good and bad, you know, at the same time. I don't want to have other recruits being bugged too much, but Sean knows how to go about it. You know, he's not one that's just going to call and annoy people. He's not a reporter, right? You know, that's how we do things. I mean. But Sean's actually having a lot of fun with it, man. You know, he's really recruiting hard. I mean, Matt Dobson's tight end out of Cincinnati, which is, you know, where Clifford is from. You know, he's a guy where I think Clifford has played a major part in putting Penn State in contention. Dawson was actually just here this past weekend for an unofficial visit, and now he's set to make a commitment here right around July 6th, July 7th, which is when the opening out in Oregon starts up. So, yeah, we'll see how that happens. We'll see how that shapes up. You know, he's down to PSU and Michigan State, but, you know, if he does end up at Penn State, I'm really looking at Clifford hard there. Of course, the coaches are always the ones that, you know, do the majority of the recruiting.
Yeah, they close, no doubt.
Yeah, exactly. But don't get me wrong. I mean, Clifford had a lot to do with sparking that interest. I mean, he was the one who brought Dawson here in the first place. And, you know, I know he was talking to Dawson's mom about this place. I mean, this is a 17-year-old young man right here going out of his way to recruit for a school. So it's been really impressive. It's been fun to watch. And, you know, most importantly, you know, he stands for the most important things that Penn State fans want to see. You know, he's a smart guy, cares about grades, cares about, you know, just his overall perception. You know, he wants people to know that, you know, he stands for those things, and he's running with it right now, and he's doing a heck of a job.
Yeah, I mean, it's look, you want all hands on deck in recruiting. In the end, though, the coaches are the throw in complete lead on all of it. So,
no doubt.
Hey, Ryan, thanks so much. Appreciate the time.
I'm going to hit up Nate right now. Make sure he knows what's up.
Okay, you tell him.
All right, the Ryan Snyder, Blue White Illustrated. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Felt like we ran the gambit today from the Philadelphia Eagles with Dave Spadaro to the Steelers and the U.S. Open with Jerry Dulac to Penn State football with Ryan Snyder. On a day where Derrick Rose was dealt by the Chicago Bulls to the New York Knicks, Jose Calderon, Robin Lopez, and Jerry and Grant in a second-round pick. He has 1 year left in his contract. LeBron James indicated today he wants to return to Cleveland. I don't think anybody's surprised by that. And Las Vegas officially was approved as the 31st team in the NHL. They have deferred the application of Quebec. They're concerned about the geographical balance of the NHL. I wouldn't be that concerned about it. I think part of it is because Detroit doesn't want to be in the West. I think that's a big part of it. And Detroit's always been a very powerful member of the league. You can pick out some other sacrificial lamb to go West, can't you? And they're also worried about, I think it's a much bigger worry for them what the Canadian dollar is right now, 78 cents to the American dollar. Is there enough corporate support in Quebec City? I think there would be. I mean, they would sell out games. They're a natural to me. They're a natural. It's a great market. I think you want to go with an even number of teams. I mean, the NFL went briefly with an odd number with 31 when they brought the Cleveland Browns back in 99, but then they quickly got the Houston Texans in there starting in 2002. So, but the 17-18 season is when Las Vegas will start. And they probably, they don't have a nickname, they probably will be the Black Knights. $500 million, and the reason is Bill Foley's a West Point graduate. That's why he prefers Black Knights. There are already some people saying, yep, they're the next Atlanta Thrashers. They'll be a bust. I don't think so. I think they'll actually do very well out there. Very, very well. They asked Gary Bettman about Las Vegas hosting an outdoor game. He said, nah, it's too hot here. I thought that was a good answer.
We're your home for news, sports, weather, and your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.